Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors and our partners, including Gateway Market and Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Market and Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe's been covering all of that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thank you, as always, to the Des Moines Ivers Session for providing our bumper music. All right, so we're going to get right into it here. To my buddies on the right who voted for Trump, Gary, Nancy, Joel, Pat, Janet, a bunch of others, this segment is for you, okay? And you know that I do not blame you for making that decision, and I always push back against the people who insist that anybody who voted for Donald Trump is a racist and stupid. I hate that, and I always push back in the strongest possible terms against that, because I know you guys, and you're not racist, and you're not stupid. And that, I think, describes most Trump voters. I know there are definitely people who probably fit that description, but that's not fair. It's certainly not a broad brush. And I believe that it's possible for people to revisit their political decisions. I have done that. I bought the Hope and Change thing with Obama. I cannot tell you how disappointed I was. I even thought after 4 years, maybe one more shot, he'll get it right the next time. No, I was wrong. Let me say that again. I was wrong. Obama was the biggest disappointment of my lifetime when it comes to politicians. So if you are having reservations about your support for Donald Trump, I get it. I have been there, okay? You know, but my question is what you're seeing now what you thought you were getting? Is this what you voted for? Is this what you wanted? And I'm not into name calling. I don't support. I mean, Trump is like the name caller in chief. He's always, he says terrible things about people. Sleepy Joe Biden is just the tip of the iceberg there. But you know, it's on the other side as well. There were I remember seeing one person I knew had a bumper sticker saying "F Trump," something like that. And of course, you've got various people who like to call Trump the Orange Monster or Orange. Variations on that, you know, and I'm not into that. But when I say that I think Donald Trump is a fascist, that's not name calling. That is a label. That is who I believe he is. I believe he is a fascist. And whether you want to, maybe you want to quibble over the words fascism, dictator, authoritarian, fine. There's probably room for discussion about the linguistic implications of each term, but I'm going to stick with fascist because I think that is who he is at heart and where he is leading us. Okay? And if you want to convince me otherwise that I should use a different term, I'm all ears for that. But let me quote Steve Levitsky. He's the author of How Democracies Die. And by the way, that book has been selling like hotcakes since the beginning of the year. He's also a political scientist. And he wrote, quote, "Dictators everywhere, first of all, claim that they're not dictators. And second of all, somewhat contradictorily, they claim that the people want a dictator." Now, interestingly, maybe you remember Trump has said both those things. He did say, of course, that he would be a dictator on day one. He's also said he's not a dictator, and he's also said that Americans want a dictator, presumably meaning him. Let me offer you one more quote, too, from Kim Lane Chapella. And if I'm saying your name wrong, Kim, apologies. She's a soc professor at Princeton, you know, one of those radical left Ivy League universities. She's done extensive research on autocracies, and that would include Hungary and Russia. And in a recent Guardian story, I saw her quoted saying, you know, that she had been wavering on using the term dictatorship until recently, but said, quote, "If I was hesitating before, it's this mobilization of the National Guard and the indication that he plans to overtake resistance by force that now means we are in it." You know, more and more of the people who study this stuff, who study fascism, who study authoritarianism, who focus on looking at the dictatorships in Russia and Hungary, are saying that this is where we are at. So I'm going to offer you, again, to my buddies who voted for Trump, you are not racist, you are not fascist, you are not stupid, and I believe that if we talk about this, we might come to a point of agreement. Let me give you 10 reasons why I think it is clear to me that Donald Trump is a fascist. First and foremost, starting from where the professor left off, deploying the military to U.S. cities. Okay, so it was Los Angeles and then Washington, D.C., and there is a tad bit of gray area, but it's pretty clear, and most legal and historic experts, argue that the Posse Comitatus Act, which again dates back to 1878, limits federal military involvement regarding domestic law enforcement. So in other words, the federal U.S. military is prohibited from acting in a domestic law enforcement capacity. That's how most people see it. And that's what's happening. I mean, that is what's happening. This is unprecedented. And there was an interesting poll about this Washington Post Char School. This is just from last week, I believe. They polled D.C. residents. 80% of them opposed Trump deploying the National Guard to Washington, D.C. 70% felt that the U.S. military did not make the city any safer, despite what Donald Trump likes to claim. And 78% said they already felt very or somewhat safe in their neighborhoods. Now, again, if there are murders and crime, that's always bad. That should be that we should do everything we can to make sure those things don't happen. And that's what local law enforcement is about. And that's what the Posse Comitatus Act speaks against. So this is likely to get worse before it gets better because, and I was absolutely appalled to see the Chipocalypse meme that Trump put out on Truth Social, showing him dressed as a cowboy of some sort. I know it's in reference to a movie. I'm not a movies guy, but anyway, there is Chicago in the background burning, and he's there, and he's saying, "I love the smell of deportations in the morning." Chicago is about to find out why it's called the Department of War. And of course, he's referencing just changing the name of the Department of Defense to the Department of War, which again is not just a linguistic change like Gulf of America from Gulf of Mexico. It's also a statement. I mean, here's the president who talked about being a president committed to peace, to trying to de-escalate the nuclear arms race, ending the war in Ukraine on day one, bringing peace to the Middle East quickly, now changing the word defense to war. This is a provocation. And it's an aside to what's going on with his occupation of cities by the U.S. military, but it sends a strong message to Chicago. I will say this, Trump did back away from what he said a little bit, sort of, saying later he's not going to war with Chicago. Well, what the heck did you post such a horrible meme for? I mean, this, you know, If a foreign government had posted such a meme, I can't imagine what the response would be. And it would be universally in opposition to that kind of demeanor. Okay, point two. Point two, meaning, again, how we know that Trump is a fascist slash dictator slash authoritarian. He's taking over the cultural institutions of the U.S. He's put himself in charge of the Kennedy Center. And the response from Kennedy Center patrons has been, astounding. Most of the performances are seeing huge drops, and some of them, they fill the house as much as 80%. It's an 80% decline in attendance in response to Trump's taking over the Kennedy Center, making himself in charge, putting together an honors event that was more like a big wet pat on the back to himself and to the right-wing people that he supports. It's shameful. The Kennedy Center is kind of the premier cultural venue in Washington, D.C. Of course, that doesn't stop there. He's also taken on the Smithsonian. There's never been a president who felt they had to, like, take over art and culture. especially someone who's such a bad dancer. I mean, come on, really? So all 19 Smithsonian museums are now being required to ensure that their exhibits are, quote, patriotic. A letter from Trump to the head of the Smithsonian claimed that insisted that the White House wants the museums to reflect, quote, unity, progress, and enduring values that define the American story. And of course, that's right in keeping with the Trump executive order earlier this year, demanding the elimination of, quote, improper, divisive, or anti-American ideology from the Smithsonian and its museums. I'll continue the quote. This initiative aims to ensure alignment with the president's directive to celebrate American exceptionalism, remove divisive or partisan narratives, and restore confidence in our shared cultural institutions. End quote. And I wonder what that's going to do to museum presentations relevant to slavery, relevant to Native American, attempted genocide on the Native American people. I wonder where that's going to go. Okay. So, and this is kind of related to cultural appropriation, right? Or, you know, just taking over the cultural message. Just this month, September, Trump had a banner of himself. I mean, a huge face of himself hung from one of the federal buildings. Now, no previous president has ever done this. None. And now, dictators, of course, in the past have done this, although it's interesting that Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban from Hungary, Erdogan from Turkey, they're pretty clearly dictators, right? But they're more cautious. They don't want to be seen as dictators, so they're not putting up these giant banners of themselves. You know who is? Xi Jinping, the Chinese Communist Party leader and dictator of China. He's good about flying big banners of himself. Yeah, so is Trump. So Trump is more like the head of the Chinese Communist Party than he is like the other dictators that we are very critical of. Interestingly, okay. So point three, threatening political opponents. I'm going to play a clip for you here.
Their reign is over. Their reign will be over, and they know it. And America will be a free nation once again. We're not a free nation right now. We don't have free press. We don't have free anything. In 2016, I declared, I am your voice. Today, I add, I am your warrior. I am your justice. And for those who have been wronged and betrayed, I am your retribution. I am your retribution.
I am your retribution. I mean, yeah, I don't know how anybody can feel good about that. Do you really want a president who is about revenge? Who is about, I mean, and who is you? I mean, look at the people he's coming after. I mean, Obama. I mean, he accused Obama of treason. That, of course, is punishable by death. We'll see where that goes. I don't know if he's going to be able to follow through on that. But he's certainly making life miserable for James Comey, the former FBI director. Also John Brennan, the former CIA director. He's also attacking Democrats like Letitia James, Chuck Schumer, Senator Alex Padilla, Senator Adam Schiff, and then Jerome Powell. But, you know, there's also John Bolton, you know, and I've never been a fan of John Bolton. That was Trump's own former national security advisor. Federal agents raided his home last month, seizing multiple computers, phones, a hard drive, and a trove of all kinds of documents, statements and reflection, statements relevant to Allied strikes. So, you know, Bolton has become a critic of President Trump. He's not been charged with a crime, but he's been pretty outspoken about his opposition to the president. And that's enough to get him in trouble. And again, he may be guilty of taking documents, you know, wrongfully and keeping them. And maybe he did that on purpose. I don't know. I do want to remind President Trump, because I know he's listening, that he did the same thing. And he stashed them in a bathroom in Mar-a-Lago. Joe Biden did something similar. So did Mike Pence. I mean, these things happen. Pence and Biden were both kind of like, okay, you know, they didn't make a big deal of it. They didn't try to hide it. They didn't try to, you know, cover it up at all. So I don't know where this is going to go, but I know it's clear that he is attacking people he doesn't like. He is your retribution if you voted for him and you wanted to vote for him for that reason. And I don't think that's a good thing. I do not think that the president or his administration, especially the Department of Justice, should be using taxpayer resources to take out people that the president doesn't like. Maybe that's just me. Hey, I got to take a short break. When I come back from that break, we'll be continuing this conversation about the 10 reasons that I think Trump is a fascist and the 10 reasons you should be concerned about it as well. Back in a minute with more conversation for you here on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
All right, welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Continuing the 10 reasons why I think Donald Trump is clearly a fascist. Okay, number four, he's profiting from his position. Okay, so the New Yorker's David Kirkpatrick did some research into this. Quite a bit of digging, in fact. He wanted to figure out how much Donald Trump and the Trump family have benefited financially from his first presidency and now the first 8 months of his second presidency. He crunched the numbers And it's kind of incredible. Since entering the White House in 2017, Kirkpatrick estimates that the Trump family has reportedly benefited by an astounding $3.4 billion. And that's not the pay he gets as a president. It's the ways in which favors have been leveraged, the ways in which cryptocurrency has been managed. I mean, that's one of the big contributors. But I'm doing this from memory, but I believe the amount of money you needed to pay to be a member of Mar-a-Lago, I'm not sure if membership's the right word, but to be a pal, a friend, welcome at Mar-a-Lago was $100,000. That's up to $1 million now. So there are all kinds of ways. I mean, look at the Qatar jet. All kinds of ways in which this president is benefiting personally and his family. And that, again, is an indication of an authoritarian using that position to enrich oneself financially. Okay, what else? Well, the bullying of institutions that the dictator does not like. Most noticeably with Trump, law firms, universities, the media. Let's start with law firms. So in February and March of this year, Trump, he started this wave of executive orders that were levied against law firms. Law firms that he, in his mind were not honest, that were involved with litigation that he said was detrimental to American interests. But what he really meant was detrimental to his interest. And so he targeted five of the biggest law firms and said he would terminate, government contracts with them, limiting their access to federal buildings and even barring interaction with federal employees. So, of course, given the bravery that one has come to expect from the legal profession, especially among big firms, they buckled. They agreed to do away with, to kind of give in to what he wanted and even to take on an awful lot of pro bono work for causes that he believed in, that Trump believes in. Yeah, and some of the orders also attacked the law firm's policies on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Okay. Even worse, in my opinion, universities. I mean, there have been universities and colleges that have said, no, we're not going to change how we stand, how we view our role in the world based on any pressure from Washington, D.C. Drake University, my alma mater, my cap's off to you. You are one of those universities. Thank you. So Trump has, again, threatened billions of dollars for research funds for universities. And the justification is anti-Semitism. They want to combat anti-Semitism because really any action that's pro-Palestinian is regarded as anti-Semitic, which is ridiculous, which is absurd. So Michael Roth, he's the president of Wesleyan University, and he said, quote, "The idea that you are attacking anti-Semitism by attacking universities is a complete charade. It's just an excuse for getting universities to conform." It's been very effective. Trump canceled Columbia University's grants until the university stopped considering race in its admissions. It also went ahead and paid $200 million in fines, and it reformed their Middle East Studies department. And I'm going to put "reformed" in quotes, because I'm sure what it did was, tone it down to the point where the Trump administration was comfortable with it. And of course you would think, okay, so that meant that the university was going to start getting its research grants back. Well, apparently weeks later, Trump's administration also froze all the university's remaining funding from the National Institutes of Health. That totaled about $700 million. So, what's really going on here? Well, for honesty, we have to turn to J.D. Vance, who back in 2021 said, quote, "We go to the universities, we use the hundreds of billions of dollars that we send to them as leverage, and we say, unless you stop indoctrinating our children, unless you stop indoctrinating our entire society, you don't get another dime of our money. So it really isn't anti-Semitism they're concerned about. It's liberal, and I put liberal in the most broad sense, liberal education. It's the broad-minded, think for yourself, do your own study, research, and come up with your own answers that the J.D. Vance and Trump and the folks involved with this don't like. Anyway, we'll see if more universities continue to buckle or if some of them take a stand, stand their ground. We'll see. I mean, Columbia, what's their endowment? They couldn't have come up with a response financially to the hit taken on them by Trump. I think they took the easy way out, and it was a cowardly way out. Okay, so the other element that Trump likes to bully primarily is the media. And it's all the big players except for Fox, of course, and Newsmax and Clay and Buck and those people. They're fine. But there was, of course, close to home here, Ann Seltzer in the Des Moines Register sued because Seltzer released a poll that showed Kamala Harris doing very well in Iowa. I mean, Trump won Iowa by what, 11, 13 points? I can't remember now. And you're upset at only winning by that, so you've got to go back and sue somebody who issued a poll that turned out to be, flawed. I mean, Seltzer has a great track record. There's nothing, anybody who has worked with her over the years knows that she does really quality work, and just looking at the results, it's quality results. So it's just petulant that Trump would come after the Des Moines Register and Ann Seltzer. But then there's the Wall Street Journal, $10 billion he was demanding from them. Paramount, $16 million. ABC, $15 million. And I know he got the money from Paramount and ABC. I believe he got did he get the $10 billion from the Wall Street Journal as well? You know, I mean, he likes to use these lawsuits to intimidate and silence news coverage he doesn't like. That's the bottom line. And, there are media that are fighting back, standing up, holding their ground. And none, in my impression, is more prominent right now than South Park, which, interestingly, is being aired by Paramount. So, I mean, Paramount gives in to Trump and, among other things, cancels Stephen Colbert. And then after they get their, they did that because they wanted a merger. They get the merger, and now they're allowing South Park on the air. So, South Park, I mean, I am not a fan of bad language, swearing, irreverent, over-the-top commentary. But it is comedy. It is a cartoon. And, one of the elements of comedy is that you kind of push the envelope. You push it really, really far, really hard. Nothing is sacred. And certainly in what South Park is doing, nothing is sacred. What they're doing to Donald Trump is, it's got to be infuriating him. And I'm just shocked that his administration hasn't found a way to push back against South Park or Paramount, because it is brutal. And if you've got sensitive ears in terms of profanity, you do not want to watch season, I think it's 27. But it is pulling no punches, and that's got to be settling really, really poorly with the Trump administration. Okay, so earlier I mentioned my item four was profiting from his position. Well, that ties really well in with item six, cozying up with oligarchs. And we think about oligarchs, I mean, we often think about Russian oligarchs because that's just very convenient, right? And because we know how they have enriched themselves at the expense of the people, we know that Putin is certainly one of them. But look at the oligarchs in the U.S. I mean, why we need to call them that? And again, the political right has correctly criticized the influence of Bill Gates, biggest farmland owner in the U.S. Why is that? George Soros, Warren Buffett. I do not fault the right's criticism of these left-ish oligarchs. But where's the outrage over Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, these other oligarchs who stood with Trump at his inauguration? They are oligarchs. Come on, folks. These are the richest people in the history of the planet. Okay, so leading up to last year's presidential election, Trump's biggest billionaire backers, 26 of them, they had contributed a total of $162 million to his campaign. That was by August of last year. I don't have in front of me how much it increased between then and the election, probably quite a bit. One of those top 26 donors, my favorite billionaire, Kelsey Warren, the guy behind the Dakota Access Pipeline, he pitched in $5.8 million. But move over, Kelsey, because then along came Elon Musk. Elon Musk, the amount of money he gave to Trump, $250 million. That makes $5.8 million seem like, well, chump change. So, you know, these people are getting rich. They're already rich. They're getting richer and richer. I mean, Zuckerberg, we talked about this last week. He has a compound in Palo Alto, California, complete with an underground bunker where he intends to survive after the collapse of the world he's helping to destroy. Or he's got a second one in Hawaii, just in case. So, I mean, there is no morality here. You don't have a functioning democracy when you have these kinds of billionaires. And they are not just out there. They're controlling government. Remember, Trump put Musk in charge of finding government ways until Musk realized that it was really hard work and he went back to doing something easier, like making cars. Anyway, for those of you who might have voted for Trump because you thought you were voting for the less warmongering candidate, and again, I make no apologies for the Democrats. The Democratic leadership of this country has been terrible when it comes to peace and war, with a handful of exceptions like our former U.S. Senator Tom Harkin. But Trump is clearly a warmonger. I mean, how can we see it as anything else? I mean, other than declaring war on U.S. cities, you know, the talk of taking over Greenland, making Canada the 51st state, that's pretty belligerent stuff. Getting control over the Panama Canal. You know, and none of that has been going anywhere. It may. We'll see. But let's look at the present. I mean, just last week, Trump authorized the blowing up of a boat in the Caribbean Sea that was allegedly drug trafficking, killing all 11 people on board, and pretty much killing the evidence. I mean, are we just going to let this guy go out and blow up whatever he thinks might be offensive to our country? That's not how democracy works. That's not how foreign policy should work. Where else is it going to? And right now, they're sending war vessels to the Caribbean. I mean, they're going to try to take out Venezuela? I don't know. Maybe Brazil. Maybe he'll go to Brazil to defend his buddy, Jair Bolsonaro. I don't know. Trump has changed dramatically. Well, I don't think he's changed. I think he lied during the campaign. But clearly, this is not the same guy that you heard from before the election.
I will prevent, and very easily, World War III, very easily. Before I even arrive at the Oval Office, I will have the disastrous war between Russia and Ukraine settled. It will be settled quickly. Quickly. I will get the problem solved, and I will get it solved in rapid order. And it will take me no longer than one day. I know exactly what to say to each of them. I got along with very well with them.
I want to see the Middle East get back to peace and real peace, but a peace that's going to be a lasting peace. And that's going to happen. I feel really, truly confident it's going to happen. And I believe it's going to happen soon.
So, yeah, he said he would end the war in Ukraine on day one. Day one. He was clear about that. He also said he would bring peace to the Middle East quickly. Quickly. And when that didn't work, what did he do? He announced Gaza Riviera. You know? I mean, I don't know how more insulting to the Palestinian people or to the, like, 99% of the world that understand that what Israel is doing in Palestine, in Gaza, is wrong, horribly wrong, is genocide. I don't know how else anybody can take this. I mean, he's basically saying that we're going to, you know, we'll finish this job by turning Gaza into a resort. I mean, you look at the, and this isn't old stuff. This was first floated, a few months ago? This story now is out from September 1. There's been a plan circulating in the White House called, again, Gaza Riviera. And that envisions the high-tech megacities all on the coast. You know, they don't say anything about the fact that they'd have to ethnically cleanse the Palestinian people to do this. The Washington Post apparently got a hold of a leaked copy of this plan. And it would involve forced displacement of the remaining population of Gaza, put the territory into a U.S. trusteeship for at least a decade. And you look at it, it's these tall buildings. It looks like Manhattan. And this is key. There are oil rigs right off the coast because oil is so safe and clean, and everybody wants to go down to a beach in a resort with an oil rig right there. Anyway, it's almost comical. It's so wrong. It's just incredible that this is still being proposed. But again, what's beyond Gaza Riviera is Palestinian genocide. Hey, I got to take a short break, folks. I got a little more on this to talk about. We'll be back in a short time on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so the eighth concern I want to bring to your attention about why I think we're looking at a fascist president. This was shared with me by Gene Wilterkins. Good material. It involves pardons, kind of the flip side of investigations, if you will. So a guy named Ross Ulbricht, who I've not heard of before, but apparently he's not a good guy. He got busted for a Bitcoin scam, maybe, and a bunch of drug stuff. Anyway, back in 2015, he was sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. That's how bad he was. But he's kind of well-liked by the Libertarian Party, or some of the leadership in the Libertarian Party. And in order to get the Libertarian Party leadership's vote, Trump promised them that he would commute Ulbricht's sentence. Well, you know, Trump doesn't always keep his word. He lies a lot. But he was good to his word this time. And a day after his inauguration back in January, he gave a full pardon to Ulbricht. That's just the tip of the iceberg, though, folks. I mean, you know, presidents do pardon people. I get that. You know what? I haven't gone back and looked at how past presidents have used the pardon. But in his first term, Trump pardoned 144 people over the course of 4 years. That's, you know, a lot of people. And that included, my favorite one was Joe Arpaio, the Maricopa County Sheriff, who was convicted of criminal contempt. I've talked about him on the show before, but he got out pretty quick. But in Trump's second term, this is, 8 months. Okay, in 4 years, he pardoned 144 people his first term. In 8 months, he's pardoned 1,600. Either they received clemency, pardons, or commutations, not only does that put them back out on the street, which in some cases is not desirable. And again, I'm not a big fan of prison time. I think prison should be reserved for people who genuinely are a danger to society, not low-level drug offenders or people with some kind of a mental health problem. That's not where they belong. You could probably argue by that standard that, some of these people that Trump commuted their sentence, some of them probably didn't fit that description either. But the bottom line is this was very political, very, very political. And also problematic for victims. Because, part of your, once your sentence is commuted, you no longer have to pay the court-ordered restitution. And for the 1,600 people who have had their sentences pardoned, there's a total of $1.3 billion in restitution that will not be going to victims. And that includes the 150 police officers from the Capitol Police Force, the D.C. police, who were injured when the pro-Trump mob stormed the Capitol on January 6th of 2020. Their restitution is now canceled. And again, a big chunk of those 1,600 are the January 6th Capitol rioters. He's also, though, and this one caught my attention, being a Midwesterner, Rob Blagojevich. Anybody remember Rob Blagojevich? He was a little Illinois governor, one of three Illinois governors in my lifetime who ended up in prison. And not just Democrats either, by the way. It's a bipartisan issue there in Illinois. But this former Illinois governor, he was convicted of multiple corruption charges, including, most entertainingly, trying to sell the Senate seat that had vacated. he was sentenced on 10 counts of wire fraud, 3 counts of bribery, and 4 counts of extortion. And it was primarily related to attempting to sell the vacated Senate seat that Barack Obama left behind when he was elected president. I guess I can say that, it's nice to see Trump, being a little bit bipartisan in the pardoning, that he's pardoning a Democrat here. But make no doubt about it, disproportionately, he has pardoned Republican allies, supporters, and donors, and a big chunk of them, the January 6th rioters. I can't think of a better word. Okay, and some of this may be a stretch from what I'm telling you to your definition of dictator, authoritarian, fascism, but I think authoritarians tend to like to deny science when it's convenient. I mean, look at how Hitler used pseudoscience to demonize the Jews. And so when science isn't convenient, like with climate change, you kind of dismiss it as wrong, as a hoax. And one thing Trump's anti-science fetish is leading to is, of course, the shutting down of wind farms. There's one off the coast of New England that's, 75% finished, that's being shut down. Is that good? I mean, wind turbines have their problems. And killing birds is not one of them, but at least not in any significant way. But there are issues with wind turbines. But shutting one down when it's 75% done because you don't like wind and you want to make sure your oil buddies get the full opportunity to capitalize on expanding energy needs, okay, that reeks of favoritism. To go along with that, Trump has made it a policy priority to promote data centers and related to that crypto mining. And also the rapid expansion of artificial intelligence. All these things demand lots of energy. And Trump is helping to make it so these facilities can come in a lot more quickly without as much public input or examination of environmental impact, impact on the water, impact on the energy. And we have a lot of these data centers going up in Iowa, around Des Moines. And let me tell you, they're hideous-looking buildings. There's no way you can look at one of these huge, sprawling concrete masses and think, "Oh, that's nice." It's not a Carnegie Library. It's not the kind of building you'd put on tour for the architectural tour by boat that is one of Chicago's biggest attractions. You know, these are ugly, and not only that, they are huge consumers of water. I think the estimate I remember for the data centers in Iowa, 11 million gallons a month for each center. You know, and then you look at the energy, the energy uses beyond the water. I mean, these are huge consumers of resources that are needed elsewhere in the community. And instead of giving people the time to, you know, really think through all these things, Trump is just kind of thinking, we're going to go ahead with that. He's taking out wind farms and fast-tracking data centers and crypto mining and AI. And also on AI, I'll add this. You know, even there have been states that have tried to put the brakes on AI, tried to provide some regulatory framework so that people aren't being caught up in all this false narrative that gets released. Trump made sure that didn't happen. And some of those are red states, states that voted for him, that wanted the ability to say, okay, we want to regulate this since the federal government's not doing it. You know? So, again, anti-science on one level, calling climate change a hoax, and then ignoring the science behind water and energy so that questionable industries that really aren't scientifically thought through entirely yet are getting fast-tracked. And it's good to see that this, you know, this fast-tracking of these facilities is running into an increasingly organized level of opposition, you know. And that's good. People need to see that these things are maybe not what their community needs. And again, beyond how any local government might feel about the demands on its energy or water, again, do you really want to live next to one of these hideous buildings? They are huge. They are, what, a couple, three football fields long, some of them? And there's nothing nice about them. Joseph Stalin would have been very, very proud of them. Okay. One more thing when it comes to food and healthcare. And again, this is maybe beyond the question of authoritarianism. This is maybe a question of just policy. But Donald Trump pledged he would not, you know, cut Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security. He said he would not do that. And yet his big, beautiful bill, so-called big, beautiful bill, absolutely trashes that commitment. I don't have the numbers in front of me now, but the number of people affected by SNAP cuts, huge. The number of people affected by Medicaid cuts, it's enormous. And, you know, Trump promised he wouldn't do that, and he supported doing that in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Yeah, maybe that's not outright fascism, but it's an absolute reneging on a campaign promise. He said he wouldn't do that. He's doing it. He's doing it in a big way. And this is only 8 months in, folks. How much further are we going to go? What are we going to see when we get into a year, too? What if Congress remains in Republican control and he has the rubber stamp that he's looking for? How many more chunks out of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? I mean, that hasn't been attacked yet to the extent that it might be, but, you know, everybody is affected by these cuts. This is not a red thing to do, or it's not something that only benefits blue state people. Come on, I'm so sick of the red blue thing. Can we all just agree that we're purple? We have a lot more in common, folks, than we have dividing us. And maybe you disagree with some of what I've said. All right, I'm going to go back and review it. My 10 reasons why I think Trump is a fascist. Again. Deploying the military to U.S. cities, clearly contrary to what the Posse Comitatus Act calls for. Two, taking over cultural institutions. The Kennedy Center, putting yourself in charge of the Kennedy Center. Dictating how the Smithsonian should organize its museums. We've never seen that in a president. Threatening political opponents. Yes, there have been impeachments. There have been, attacks. I mean, Democrats aren't immune from that problem either, but the extent to which Trump is attacking his political opponents. Whew. I never thought I'd see the day where I thought it might be feeling a little bit sorry for John Bolton. Four, again, profiting from his position. Presidents retire and go on speaking tours and make ridiculous amounts of money. Obama's done that. Reagan did it. Jimmy Carter, as far as I know, didn't do that. But Trump is not. He's not waiting to retire. He's doing it while he's president. He's making incredible amounts of money, he and his family, while president. Five, bullying law firms, universities, the media. You don't do that. Those are independent entities that should remain independent. Six, cozying up with oligarchs, with Zuckerberg, with Musk, with the other big billionaires that helped fund his campaign. Do we really want a tiered society? Well, we already have it. The society is so divided right now, top crust, and then those of us on the bottom. And the warmongering thing, seven. I mean, he said he would bring an end to the war in Ukraine. He said he would get Gaza under control. And we see how that's playing out. It's not good. It's not good. The pardons. Pardoning 1,600 people just in the first 8 months of his second term. The anti-science stuff. Shutting down wind farms. Taking away local authority when it comes to siting data centers. And finally, what he's doing on Medicaid and SNAP. Folks, disagree with me. I'm happy to hear from you. Anyway, after a short break here, Kathy Burns is joining me. We're going to be discussing, for our farm and food segment today, we're going to be discussing how fewer children are getting meals now that Iowa opted out of the summer EBT program. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Ed Fallon with you, folks, and Kathy Burns joining me for our farm and food segment. We're talking about the abandonment of the EBT Hungry Kids Summer Program, whatever it was called. I don't have the right name there, but our state decided not to do that,
mm-hmm.
not to take millions of bucks of federal money to help feed poor kids, and instead to launch our own program. Kathy, how's that program working out for us?
Long story short, not well at all. And we know that Governor Kim Reynolds here in Iowa decided to move away from the summer EBT, and that's the electronic benefits transfer program that is part of the SNAP benefits through USDA to provide assistance for summer meals for school-aged children. Mm-hmm. She decided to move away from the federal dollars for that because she's insinuated pretty strongly that parents weren't to be trusted making healthy choices for food for their kids and indicating, well, they will be buying sugary drinks and candy and such.
And no doubt some of that happens.
Some of that happens. Well, we're not so sure that her food box program is any improvement, but there were 13 states in the U.S. that did not participate in the summer EBT. Iowa was one of them. You can look up what the states were, but the Department of Health had estimated that if we had stuck with the summer EBT here in Iowa, about 240,000 Iowa children would have qualified for the benefits. But the governor's Healthy Kids Iowa pilot project this year, which was goaled to serve about 65,000 children per month, only actually served about 47,000 children, and that is 75% of the goal. That doesn't sound too bad, but more importantly, the number of children who receive food is only about 20% of the 240,000 who could have received the summer EBT benefit.
Now, again, the argument is that we don't want poor people spending taxpayer dollars on pop and candy. And so we're going to give them baskets of food that have everything, all good stuff in it, no pop, no candy.
Well, the food was one issue, but one of the main problems with the way this went was that it was all food pantry-based labor and then volunteer labor to get these boxes, get the food ordered, get the boxes ready to distribute those. And Iowa Public Radio featured the group in Wapello County, which is the second highest rated county in Iowa for childhood food insecurity. And volunteers packed and distributed boxes out of a shed. There was one shed in the county for this in Ottumwa.
Was this 1 day a month, too?
1 day a month, one shed open between, I forget the times, but it was just a couple of hours. So, or 2 or 3 hours. So kudos to the volunteer who organized that. Her name was Kathy Mason, and she was quoted as indicating that, well, you know, they only got out so many meals. They sure wish they could have done more, but at least they got those out. And they're charged with some.
But the thing is, this is the Republican Party, who Republican governor in this case, who likes to talk about individual responsibility.
Mm-hmm. You know, trust the parents to make the right choices.
Let parents decide what schools to send their kids to.
Whether to get vaccines.
Whether
for their
to
children.
Get vaccines. You know. Whether to let farmers decide whether to put in buffer strips to prevent soil and nitrates from running off into our water. But when it comes to poor people, no, they can't decide for themselves whether or not they can go, what they can go out and buy. So instead of giving them, you know, a card where they can go out and buy groceries whenever they need them.
At a grocery store that is in their own community or farmers markets. This was supporting the local community. I'm just going to read the list of what was in Wapello County's box for July.
Okay.
Chef Boyardee canned meals, chickpea spread, fine eggs, good. Fruit cups, probably in plastic containers. Who knows how much sugar's in that. Ground beef, hot dogs, your favorite, Ed.
Gosh.
Mac and cheese cups. Milk, good. PB&J sandwiches, I'm guessing they're individually wrapped in plastic. Pears. I don't know, maybe whole pears, who knows? Protein baking mix, protein shakes, shredded cheddar cheese, and vegetable cups.
So that's July, the height of summer, the height of produce season. I don't see any produce in there except for pears, which aren't ripe. Pears aren't ripe in July.
Pears don't come in July.
Can you tell that I'm kind of livid about this?
I read the list of food and I almost cried for the children and families.
This is not anyway. We could go on and on about this. We'll have to come back and visit this again because
it's sad.
It's just wrong. It is so wrong. I can't believe anybody would not see through this. Kathy, thanks for joining me today. Hey, thanks for our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, Kathy, and I. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners. Thanks also to the Des Moines Ivers Session for providing our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.